Good afternoon, and welcome to this episode of the Full Press Raiders podcast. We are about 3 days from this past weekend's end of the NFL draft to discuss all of it. One of the family, he is the managing editor of Last Word on College Football, Tony Siracusa. Good afternoon, Tony. How are you?
T Biggs, how you doing, my man?
Man, I am great. Any day above ground is always a good one.
That's true.
Now, when you look at the draft in its totality, what were your thoughts?
I think a lot of teams got a lot better. And here's how. You and I spent the last month, even more than a month, talking about how deep this draft was, right? That there wasn't – and I kept hearing, and I'm sure you probably did too – people talking about it wasn't an exciting draft. There wasn't a lot of anticipation. That's because there wasn't a quarterback debate in the first three or four picks, right? About which quarterback was better, who's going to go one, who's going to go two. What this lacked in quarterback drama more than made up for with the depth of talent in this draft. And you and I have been going over the positions and talking about, look, at name any position, and there are 3, 4, 5 elite-level guys at that position. But then beyond that, there's a lot of really good talent. And the last time you and I talked before the draft, I said there are a lot of teams that are going to get really talent-rich in the third and fourth round. And so I think what you see is every year there's a handful of teams who do well. There's a lot of teams who do mediocre, and there's a lot of teams who do poorly. This was the opposite. There was so much talent at such a depth in this draft that a lot of teams really improved themselves.
Now, when you look at the first round, you have Travon Walker went one. I didn't see that coming. And I mean, yes, the film is, he has good film, he has good traits, but the number one overall pick should be somebody to come and be a cornerstone for the next decade or so, for the next 6 years at least, decade at most. Do you see that in him?
No. I was surprised by it. I saw him going maybe seventh or eighth. And, you know, if you don't live and breathe the draft like you and I do, or at least the process or the college players like I do, there's a big gap between going first and going eighth. And I really saw him around seventh or eighth. So I was surprised. I think he's a very good player. But you just threw out a really interesting word, a cornerstone. I don't see him as being a cornerstone. I see him as being a very good, productive player. I don't see him being a cornerstone of the franchise.
I mean, being the number one pick, that there are otherworldly expectations of him now. Like, he can't have a bad year.
Right. Absolutely. Look, you will be starting from day one. You have to be. You're the number one pick. With the money the team is basically required to invest in you in your rookie contract based on the collective bargaining agreement, you are going to be starting. And there's a big learning curve that I'm not sure. I was surprised. I was sitting here watching it and kind of scratched my head a little bit.
Between that and Cole Strange as a first rounder, did you see that happening?
I was kind of on the edge about it. I really was. I was kind of like, you know, it's possible. I was a little surprised, but I wasn't stunned by it.
And, I mean, and you have
– it's New England. It's New England. I mean, look, it's Bill Belichick. He does eccentric things, and I think that just kind of fit in with that. Belichick looks at Strange as a guy that, you know, we take – you know, and I say we, meaning Bill Belichick. You know, hey, we take these guys that get overlooked and we turn them into all pros, and this guy fits that model. Maybe. It's New England.
I mean, it is. Then you have the Cowboys. The Cowboys, to me, this is a team, this is a franchise where they went Bob Lilly first overall pick, and then they decided to draft the eventual replacement for Tyron Smith and the raw tackle from the kid from Tulsa.
Right.
Were you surprised that a kid that unpolished is going to be the heir apparent?
Yeah, I don't think the we talked about who did well, who did what, who didn't do well. I don't think the Cowboys had a good draft. I really don't. Tyler Smith with your one first round pick. There were a lot of other offensive linemen available at 24 that I would have gone after well ahead of Tyler Smith. He's a good player. He's not first round talent player.
And now it's incumbent upon those coaches to get him technically sound to be able to play, because right now he's moldable, but it's just he's not ready to step on the field and start at left tackle or right tackle.
No. And starting at left tackle is, again, to use the word you put out there, the cornerstone. Left tackle is the cornerstone of the entire offensive line. And, he's certainly not ready to go there. Can they move him to right tackle? Sure. But, again, there is a lot of offensive line talent that I had marked much higher than Tyler Smith at 24.
The Cowboys could have traded down three times and probably got him with a late second-round pick.
Yeah, that's true. I agree.
I mean, it is stunning to watch some of these teams reach. And being Wisconsin, we have a very overwhelming Packers contingent here. And
sure,
they were great with Quay Walker being their first-round pick. And I don't know. I mean, upside, yes, but he only started 1 year and he rotated this past year. Are they Packers hoping for the traits to surface and to become consistent, or do they think that he can step in right now and play?
I got to be honest with you. I like Green Bay's draft.
Really?
And here, yeah, I really do. And here's why. They had, 12 picks? I think, mm-hmm. total throughout the draft. If you get production out of a third of that draft, and when I say production, I mean now, early on, and for the next 3 to 4 years, maybe even throughout their rookie contract, their five-year rookie contract, if you get solid production out of a third of that, I think you had a really good draft. I think Walker can play. Can he play right away? Can he start right away? Maybe. I don't know. We'll see. But I think by midseason, I think you're going to see good production out of them. The other thing that I like since we're talking about Green Bay in particular, it's a little curious, but maybe not so much. They drafted two left tackles. They drafted Sean Ryan out of UCLA, and they drafted Zach Tom out of Wake Forest. They're both left tackles. But with these guys, they are both flexible. Ryan, to me, is a prototypical left tackle. However, he can also move inside to guard. Zach Tom is huge, super bright guy out of Wake Forest. Graduated with a bachelor's and a master's and did it early. Very impressive guy. But he also played some center. And so you got two guys who are who came in as left tackles. You're going to see what you get out of them. One of them is going to move, but the nice thing, but what they did is one of them is going to move, but they don't have to force it because either one of them can move. And they went out and got Rasheed Walker out of Penn State, for good measure, another offensive lineman. I actually like Green Bay's draft. I like that they got Devontae Wyatt also out of Georgia. I like Devontae Wyatt a lot. I think Devontae Wyatt is going to be productive very early on the defensive line. I think Green Bay did a good job.
I was happy that the Packers did draft Christian Watson out of North Dakota State because mm-hmm. they needed a receiver in the worst way, because you have Cobb, who is not older because he actually started the league at 20, but he's starting to slow it down. You have Allen Lazard, who is not a burner. He's a big body. They needed someone to be able to stretch the field, and he gives Rodgers that. And like you said, with Tom and Ryan, the Packers are planning. I like the back end of the draft. I just thought that they could have waited on Quay Walker and possibly, but to their credit and in their defense, by the time they did pick, a lot of the high-end receivers were gone. Now, speaking of, did you think that Jahan Dotson would find himself in Washington so early?
No. I mean, again, I don't. That's another one I don't get, and another one where I look at the Redskins. I'm sorry, the Washington Football Club, Commanders, whatever. And I don't think they did a good job. I don't think they had a good weekend. You could have gotten Jahan Dotson in the second or third round. There was no need to burn your number 16 pick overall on the guy. And, you know, it's, you've already lost a lot because, you know, you were able to kind of recoup the third rounder that you lost in the Carson Wentz deal, you know, with the Saints, and you did some maneuvering, but you had some other needs that were a little bit more pressing. And again, Jahan Dotson was available later on. I didn't like the pick at all. I really don't think they did. I mean, they got Sam Howell, who, look, I like Sam Howell. I know the offensive coordinator, Phil Longo, of North Carolina, know him very well. We talk regularly. He's very high on Sam, as you would expect. But, man, if you think Sam Howell is your future and that's what you're banking on down the road, I'm not convinced. And so I look at who they pick. They went too high for Jahan Dotson out of Penn State. And the rest of the talent they got is not that impressive, frankly. If you ask me, the best pick they got was the last one, which was Christian Holmes, the cornerback out of Oklahoma State, because, you know, they took him all the way down at 240. And that was appropriate value for that spot in the draft right there. That was probably the best pick they made all weekend.
I look at Sam Holmes as someone who followed North Carolina football and possibly probably seen every single snap he took while being a Tar Heel, and came in with high hyped up. This is going to be the resurgence in Carolina football. I can't name one signature win.
No, there aren't any.
And when
he played spectacularly at times. His decision making is still pretty questionable. If he is what you're looking at as your future down the road, you know, I don't get it. I really don't. You know, I realize it was the fifth round, but it's not like he's going to step in for Wentz anytime soon.
Howell led the ACC in 50-50 balls. Normally when you think of the term 50-50 ball, you think of a receiver making a contact or contested catch. No, these are passes that Howell will throw into triple coverage. So there's a 50-50 chance it will be picked off at the most inopportune moments because he led the ACC in facepalm. If you're a fan, if you're a watcher, you're like, oh, no. Like, you can see it coming. You see when he's rolling out, like, oh, no.
Run
with the ball, eat it, tuck it, and run. But no, Sam will let it go.
If you can see it coming, imagine what the defenses are seeing.
They're smiling.
Yeah.
I mean, a couple of those passes, I saw a couple of the defensive backs had to fair catch a couple of the interceptions.
Right, yeah, it's crazy.
It's bad. Now, looking at the first two cornerbacks selected, we talked about the difference between Sauce Gardner and Derek Stingley. Mm-hmm. I just don't understand. Again, Gardner, the best cornerback available. It was the first. What are we missing with Stingley, or if we're missing anything? I think that what he missed a whole lot of time, and the best ability is availability.
Yeah, no, and that's a really good point. Best availability is availability, and I agree. I think, look, I don't know how Stingley looked at his personal tryouts for the various teams. I saw him going top 10. I certainly didn't see him going number 3 because of the injuries. When he is healthy, he is one of the best 2 or 3 best defensive backs in the entire country. when he is healthy. He missed a lot of last season. He missed some of the season before. So, you know, Houston has to be pretty convinced that all of his health issues are fixed. I mean, he was playing, you know, he broke his ankle last year. And, you know, he didn't do all of the drills at the combine, saved him for his pro day and the personal workouts. And it made me wonder if the combine in late February, is he just trying to protect himself? Because if you don't do it at the combine, you're putting a lot of pressure on yourself at your pro day, because that's all there is then, you know, mm-hmm. that and a few personal workouts, and that's all there is. And you put a lot of pressure on yourself, and I was wondering if he still wasn't 100%. So, yeah, look, between the two defensive backs, to me, Sauce Gardner is by far the better one. The Jets had to just be jumping for joy when, you know, when Houston took him. Because, man, that was the Jets had a fabulous weekend.
They did.
I mean, the state of New York / New Jersey overall had a really big weekend. Buffalo had a decent draft. The Giants had a great draft. The Jets had a great draft. I don't know if they're going to win, but they, you know, that's a whole other issue. But you look at the Jets getting Sauce Gardner and getting Garrett Wilson, getting Brees Hall, running back from Iowa State, and they got him down to pick 36, and they did really well. I mean, you know, we've talked. I'm a big Sauce Gardner fan. I think this guy's going to be a fantastic pro. His football sense, his drive to the ball, his ability to make plays in open space, I think he's going to be a big-time pro. You know, we're all projecting. We don't know until you're there, but based on the same projections as we do for anyone else, I think the Jets had a great weekend.
Were you surprised that Drake London went so high?
Not really. I mean, we you know, when we had talked about it, obviously, same kind of thing. The issue was, you know, his health, because he missed half of the season. And so with a broken leg, but he was on a record-setting pace, obviously, before he broke it. So I think, you know, look, he had a lot of time to heal. I talked to people who saw him in individual pro days, and, you know, they were talking about he looked great. He looked terrific. He looked healthy. He was running full speed. He was making the cuts. He was doing all of those things. So with that being said, a healthy Drake London was to me the best receiver in the draft. And, you know, Atlanta's got basically two skyscrapers now at receiver, which, you know, makes any quarterback very happy.
Now, when we come back from break, we need to delve into the Las Vegas picks, because some of them are interesting and some of them I can see a plan, but we definitely will dive into more of what they could have done differently or what we do like. You are listening to the Full Prayers Raiders podcast on the FPC Radio Network. We are back with the Full Prayers Raiders podcast. Tanner Spiggs, Tony Circus. Tony, when you look at the first pick of the Raiders, this might be their best pick. Dylan Parham from Memphis. Mm-hmm. Versatile guard/center type. They will probably have him compete at center. What did you like about this pick?
I liked it that it filled an immediate need. Look, when you aren't picking until the third round, I mean, the Raiders had, as we talked about early on, had a lot of immediate needs. One of them was receiver. So they traded away some early draft picks to go get Davante Adams and fill one of those immediate needs. But it then limited you to fill the other needs from the draft. But this filled one quickly. And I like Parham. I think he's really good. I think he's a very good NFL prospect. A lot of quickness. He's got great body control. His technique is really good. Now, it's interesting that, you know, I think overall, I think he's, comparatively speaking, we'll say, he's a little small upper body to be playing, to be a dominant guard, but he can also play center. He's got, again, we've talked about with some of the other teams, we talked about with Green Bay, flexibility, having a player that can fill in at different spots. He's 6'3", about 310, so there is some frame there to put on some more weight and some more strength. You talk to anyone who followed Memphis or friends that I have who covered Memphis football, and they'll talk about his high football IQ. So based on the fact that your ability to fix your issues through the draft was limited because you had limited draft picks and you didn't have anything until the 90th pick, mid to late third round, I think they did a good job getting him.
I like Parham for the reason that you mentioned. And with Carr, who's entering his ninth season, he spent the better part of seven of those years with Rodney Hudson protecting. This is a center in Hudson who gave up three pressures in something like a couple thousand snaps. So as that, Carr is not used to having people coming towards him so he can see them. Parham, he will fight for a spot. I think to the point of the trying to build more to his frame, center might be the most logical spot because you don't need to be massive to be a center. You have to be technically sound and you have to be smart. Now, their next pick, they went with Zamir White, the running back out of Georgia. To me, do you think this kind of either puts intense heat on Josh Jacobs or does this signal the end of Josh Jacobs?
It's the end of Josh Jacobs. I think they made this pick specifically because, you know, they were declining his fifth year option. And so, you know, I think this allows them to move Josh Jacobs out. And I think that that was the intent. Zamir White is a very good running back, very serviceable. I know that Georgia's defense got all the attention last year because it was elite. And I know that the offense didn't have the big names. But, you know, Stetson Bennett was the one playing in the national championship game. And if you didn't follow college football for the last 3 years, you were scratching your head about who the kid even was. But I think Zamir White is not going to dominate football games for you. What Zamir White is going to do is hold on to the football. He does not turn the ball over. He's good on contact. He keeps the legs driving forward. You don't see the guy getting tackled backwards. And so I think it's a good pick, and I think it frees them up to move Josh Jacobs and do something else, get some help elsewhere. Based on the running back picks, also, I'm going to tell you, even though it feels like it was a throw-in at the end of the draft, I think they did a good thing getting Britton Brown from UCLA. I know a lot of people don't know him. He was a grad transfer from Duke who stayed at UCLA 2 years. So he wound up taking that COVID super senior year and played 6 years of college football. And I will tell you, he knows the game inside and out. He is a between the tackles runner. So he's going to go straight forward and find that hole. And he's going to be that short yardage guy that you can rely on for years, who every now and again is going to turn that 3 to 4 yard run into an 8 or 9 yard run. He doesn't have breakaway speed. He's got good speed. He's got very serviceable speed. But he's going to be that reliable guy. Again, doesn't turn the ball over. I think he had one fumble in his entire 2 years at UCLA. And a good, solid, physical between the tackles runner who I think is going to be reliable.
When I look at the Raiders backfield, they have seven running backs on the roster now. And they have guys like Amir Abdullah, who made this their camp body. They have Brendan Bolden, who's probably going to keep a spot because he had the familiarity with Josh McDaniels and Dave Ziegler. You have Kenyon Drake, who's owed a ton of money this year. So it'll be interesting to see how many they keep. Now, the next pick is probably my favorite one, Neil Farrell Jr., because for this simple fact, if you talk to people who just follow the numbers in the timer and the stopwatch of the draft, they said this was a horrible pick because he ran this He is a nose tackle. No one cares what he runs.
Right.
If you exactly. put on the film tells a different story. The film, to me, portrays a player that doesn't mind doing all of the dirty work, but yet still has enough lateral movement, despite his size, to be a factor in the passing game. He might not get home often, but he's going to crush the pocket from the front, that stops the quarterback from climbing the pocket. That means they have to go laterally. What did you think of the Ferrell pick?
I think it's a really good pick, and let me address something about his speed and his time and whatever. If you're looking at his time in the 40, I don't care, because you know if your defensive tackle's 40 yards downfield, where the heck is he? What I care about is what he does in that 5-yard split, because that shows an explosiveness out of his stance. Now, it's not a traditional defensive tackle stance, but it is still a stance. It is still a crouch stance. And his split time in the 5 was perfectly on par with any of the top-end defensive linemen that were at the combine. So I think it's good. I think, you know, as you said, he is a traditional nose tackle. So he's got that really great overall size, and he's got that really good power. He's really almost built in the old school kind of college football mode. I think that, you know, it's going to take him some time. It's going to take him camp. He's not going to be a starter when camp ends, but he's going to see some snaps early on in the rotation. I have no doubt about it.
The next pick is one that I initially was happy about, but then I went back and reviewed my notes and reviewed more film. I'm kind of left saying, Matthew Butler, defensive lineman, Tennessee. First glimpse, oh, this guy has tools. Then you're like, oh, his film is just okay. I mean, he's quick, but they could have went so many other places with this pick. I know it's the 5th round, but if, like you mentioned at the top, they have their first pick was 86. So they had to do something. And I just, with Butler, he just seemed like he's a rotational guy. What did you see from the former Tennessee product?
Here's my problem with Butler, is that he has that initial burst that we just talked about, right? He's got that initial explosion at the snap. He loses it quickly. When you watch the film on him, he's got that explosive first or second step, but then gets taken out by offensive linemen relatively easily. It's almost as if he got off the snap, he's got a couple steps in, play is over. It's not over. You have, on average, you have to maintain that push for 6.6 seconds on average, and you're going to get about 2.5 seconds out of him. He's got a strong upper body, but I don't see a lot of lower body strength, which you really need in a good defensive lineman, because you need that lower body leverage. So it makes him not quite as powerful as you would hope for a guy his size. I mean, you know, he is 6'4", but he's 300 pounds. And he needs to have at this point, because he is a senior, he did stay all 4 years, you would have hoped to have seen his lower body strengthen more than it really did. Look, is he serviceable? Yeah. Is he someone that is developmental really for a year or two down the road? Yeah. He'll get some snaps this year. He's never going to be the full-time starter. And that's what concerns me a little bit with that pick. And again, as you said, look, it was round 5. I get it. But when you only have a handful of picks like the Raiders did, I think they could have done better.
Now, the next pick at 238 is Thayer Munford Jr. From Ohio State.
Mm-hmm.
Tackle. Reversible guy. At this point, I think the Raiders were looking at depth, because they have had last couple seasons horrendous tackles that were there. They had to play guys via injury that shouldn't be playing tackle on a starting level. What do you see about Munford that makes you think that he can contribute to this team?
His size, I mean, at 6'6", 325 pounds, he's really got good size. He's got good length for the position. He's got a good wingspan. He's technically good. He's got, you know, powerful hands, and he plays with a wide base leverage. So technically, he's really good. Is he dominant? No. Does he need some time to develop? Yes. But as a seventh round pick, he's also not going to cost you very much. And so, you know, he's there, and you go get him. And as you said, you use him for depth because you got, you know, you already got Parham up at the top of your draft. So he's got possibility. I think that's what I would say, is he's got possibility to be productive in a year or so. I wouldn't expect much out of him right now.
Now, we mentioned Britton Brown already. So what did you think the Raiders, where could they have gone, and what do you think they should have attacked instead of maybe picking like a Butler type?
I would have liked to have seen them get some more help in the defensive secondary. There were, you know, as we had talked about, there were the elites at the top, the Kyle Hamiltons, the Sauce Gardeners, the players and the Derek Stingleys. There was a lot of good talent after that. And I would have liked to have seen them go get, you know, a defensive back. There were any number of them available, even all the way through the fifth round or into the fifth round. But, you know, look, when you get that late in the draft, you start picking at best available instead of particular need. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
You're trying to fill your need with the early pick. After that, you start looking at best available.
Now, when you look at who they signed as undrafted free agents, one name that kind of rises to the top is, well, two, Chase Garbers, the quarterback out of Cal, and Darian Butler, the linebacker out of Arizona State. I like Butler.
Mm-hmm.
I know that he has a connection to Antonio Pierce because he recruited him, he coached him. Mm-hmm. Do you think Butler, because to his credit, he got in phenomenal shape this last offseason and played his last season in Tempe in better shape than he's ever been.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think he could possibly sneak into maybe not a starting spot, but see some sub-package time?
Yeah, look, he's going to make the team. You know, the undrafted free agents, it's an inexpensive gamble for the team. You're basically inviting them to camp. They have to be exclusive to your camp. They're not going to go somewhere else. You know, there's the, when you don't get drafted, look, if you haven't been drafted, and I've talked to a lot of agents about this, they've got guys, if they go to the seventh round and their player hasn't been drafted, they'd rather them not get drafted. They'd rather have them have shots at undrafted free agent status. Multiple teams come in and say, we want your guy. Here's what we're offering. I think there's like a $45,000 cap on it. You go to training camp and see if you make the team. You either make the team or maybe you get kept on in the practice squad, whatever the case may be. The next step below that is you get offers for tryouts, which you're not getting paid bupkis to go do that. And you can, but you can take as many teams as you want and go try out. It's on your own dime. So I think Butler's going to make the team. I think he's good enough to make the team. I think he's good enough to probably see some snaps, depending upon obviously how he does at camp. I think he's good enough to see some snaps, you know, early on in the preseason games and make a case for himself. And I think he'll do fine. I think, look, again, low risk if you're the Raiders. So why not? The kid showed out some real skills at Arizona State his last year there.
No.
I don't see any point in Garbers. I really don't.
I don't get it.
I don't think he's an NFL quarterback. I don't care who's picking him. I don't think he's an NFL quarterback.
I always thought that somebody like Akil Glass would have been good there.
Mm-hmm.
As a developmental guy.
I agree.
It looks like the Raiders are going to roll with Nick Mullins as their backup to Derek Carr, which scares.
Yeah.
Which as somebody, if you root for the Raiders, you hope that Derek Carr can play a full 17 and potential playoff run. If you had to give this draft for the Raiders a letter grade, what would it be?
I'd give it a mid B. You did what you could do with the amount of picks you had. Did you fill all your needs? No. Were you going to be able to fill all your needs? Not likely. Could you have made some better decisions? Maybe one or two. So I give it a solid B.
I agree. I think that'd be a sign. Like they did what they had to. Like they didn't overreach, which was good. They kind of stayed in the wheelhouse and kind of, for lack of a better term, hit what was pitched. Now with the transfer portal sort of, you know, heating up, what's going on at Last Word on College Football?
Wow, we've got following it. It's weird. The transfer portal deadline was Sunday, but you would never know it with all the news because there is it's taken the NCAA a couple of days to get through all the paperwork from Sunday and verify people's eligibility and how much they had left and so on. So there we're covering that because it's still going on. We're also taking a look at, based on all the movement that goes from team to team to team, we're kind of settling in and saying and taking a look at who the best returning players are by position within the conferences. In other words, you had all of these guys move out from, and I'm just being hypothetical here, you had guys move out from Texas Tech and Kansas and Oklahoma, and they're all spread out over there. Who are the best players who were in the conference last year, on these teams last year, and returning? And kind of trying to set the table that way. We're in the midst of doing the Big 12 right now, and we'll be doing it for every conference throughout the summer. There's just some other player profiles that we're doing also, including some still on guys who were just drafted. There's a guy, this was such a great story, and it was sad that ESPN and the NFL Network just whiffed on it completely. Denver picked a tight end out of UCLA named Greg Dulcich.
Yes, and one of the better ones.
He is one of the better ones, and they completely missed his story. George Patton, obviously not the general, former general, but George Patton is the general manager of the Denver Broncos, all right? He played at UCLA. His roommate at UCLA was a quarterback, reserve quarterback named Jim Bonds. Jim Bonds was Greg Dulcich's high school coach at St. Francis High School in La Cañada, California, and he died about a year ago from cancer. This was a fabulous story. This kid who dedicated the last year of his college play to his old high school coach, Jimmy Bonds, and then gets picked in the draft by Bonds' old high school college roommate at UCLA. What a great story. So we're covering a lot of player profiles, even on guys who have now been drafted from the colleges we follow so much. So we are, you know, look, it may be May, but, man, we are still full speed, the Last Word on College Football.
One question about the realignment. Is this the end of the Conference USA?
Probably, yeah. You know, you've got – There's still so much movement. We don't know. Let's look big picture overall to answer that question. We now have schools that are going to join the Big 12 earlier than expected, right? Cincinnati, some other schools are are looking to join next season, 2023, instead of what was going to be 2024 and 25. We don't know when Oklahoma and Texas are leaving the Big 12. They haven't paid the bill, so to speak, to get permission to settle the contract to leave and go to the SEC. There's still so much shuffling going around, and Conference USA really doesn't have the gravitas, doesn't have the package to sell to draw really high-end schools in. Anything they get at this point to boost up their teams, their conference, is going to look like getting the afterthoughts, the also-rans, teams and programs who really had nowhere else to go. So I think within the next 2 years, we're probably done with Conference USA.
I was surprised because if you look back, you had Memphis in Conference USA. You had, I want to say Cincinnati was in Conference USA. Mm-hmm. You had big programs where it seemed like Conference USA was going to be like around for a while, but then the emergence of the Sun Belt.
Yes.
I thought the Sun Belt was just going to stay that middle of the road, mid-major, if you follow college basketball type, but they have done a remarkable job of not just reinventing themselves as a big-time player, but they have, from the top down, seemingly worked at building up ground support, not just in media, but from people in general.
Let me tell you how much regard on a national basis the Sun Belt is getting with the moves that they're making, like you've talked about. One of my assignments for the Football Writers Association as an organization, aside from covering the team, you know, that I cover, one of them is when we get to November is we start narrowing down the list for potential All-Americans for the Football Writers Association. And one of my tasks will be to follow ACC players now that I'm out here in the Mid-Atlantic area. But one of them is also going to be that I've been assigned is to start following the Sun Belt. Now, I watch a lot of Sun Belt games, but one of my tasks is going to be on these conference calls to report weekly on the top Sun Belt performances and top performers and make a case for guys who deserve consideration for the Football Writers All-American team, because we're looking at what they're doing. And it's no longer, hey, here's a guy who's having a good fluke season, let's find a place for him on first or second team All-American. It's, we're going to be tracking these guys every week because the conference is that improved and deserves it.
And it's deep. You have your Appalachian States. You have your Louisiana. You have your Coastal Carolina. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if they have met their 10th year as a program yet, but they built that program out of nothing. Nothing.
Right. And if you haven't watched Grayson McCall play quarterback, you've really missed out on some fun. He's really a good quarterback.
And the Sun Belt is – it's fun football. The Sun Belt is now what the MAC was about 5 years ago.
Yes. I think that's a good comparison. I agree. Wide open offenses, good defenses, but offenses that like to put the ball downfield, like to play the spread, like to put guys in motion on every play. It's fun. It is entertaining. It is entertaining football. I agree. I think that's a good comparison to the MAC from probably 5-6 years ago.
It is definitely good football. Now, how can people follow you on social media?
Sure. LastWordOnCollegeFootball.com, or you can go to Last Word on Sports and click on the college football link. Either way, you'll find us there and all the good work that our writers are doing every day. We've got Twitter at LastWordOnCFB, and they can find me on Twitter at Tony Bruin.
This has been another fun episode of the Full Press Readers podcast. Be good to yourselves and be good to each other.